Welcome to Just JKing, the podcast where we transform your HR headaches into high fives. Whether you're a founder, CEO, or just someone with HR questions you're too afraid to ask, we've got the insights, laughs, and light bulb moments that you crave.
Enjoying the show? Hit that five-star review and subscribe now so you never miss out.
Welcome back to Just JKing with Jennifer and Kim.
Our guest today is Titi Odukoya.
Welcome to the podcast, Titi. So for our listeners, just to introduce our guest, Titi has over 12 years of experience in talent acquisition and talent management. She's passionate about finding, attracting, and retaining the best talent. In her current role at a unicorn Canadian startup, Titi manages and leads a team who specializes in hiring for engineering, product design, data information security, growth, customer, and infrastructure positions, which I must say are all very challenging areas to try to find talent right now. So we're really excited to hear your perspective and how you get that done.
And Titi's also a certified human resources professional, project management professional, and has a master's degree in global HR management. It's no wonder she even has any time to recruit. Welcome to the pod, Titi.
Thank you. Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Kim. Oh my gosh, I'm really excited to be here and just to have a great chat with you both.
Excellent. So why don't we kick it off? Everybody's talking. What is going on in HR these days? Tell us some of the current recruitment trends.
Yes. I mean, the last few years have been really, really interesting, to say the least. Since the pandemic, we've seen the rise of various trends, including like fully remote and flexible ways of working. We've seen an uprise in terms of compensation. We've seen changes based on skills-based hiring with employers. And right now, I would say that recruiting is just really, really fun. It is what we call an employer's market right now. And what that means is that we have more candidates than jobs available. And so the average job applicant right now could spend between anywhere from 3 to 9 months just trying to find a job, which was really, really different a year or 2 years ago, where you could get a job in a matter of weeks.
So even for these highly technical positions, Titi, you're finding that it's still an employer's market? Like, what's really changed?
Yeah. So despite the fact that it is an employer's market and we see tons of candidates available, it's still very, very hard to find like highly talented candidates. And that's because these candidates are not necessarily job hunting. And they are very reluctant to make a move just based off the fact that there's so much layoffs going off. And so the last in, first out thing is a big deal. You don't want to be the newbie in an organization that might be doing layoffs in a month after you've joined.
That makes sense. So from your perspective, it sounds like you're having quite a bit of success filling the roles that you're charged with filling. Is there an employer brand component to that? And what do you do to ensure that you are able to convince those more passive candidates to come over into the roles that you're trying to fill?
A great question. So a strong employer brand must reflect authenticity, which is what a lot of candidates are looking for right now. And so to resonate with today's job seekers, employers need to showcase transparency, flexibility, and most importantly, a commitment to employee well-being. And with the rise of social media and employer review platforms, candidates are very aggressive with researching for potential employers more thoroughly, and they are looking for alignment with their personal values. And in my experience, part of the strategies for building a strong brand would include things like showcasing company culture, whether it be using testimonials and stories from employees that highlight real experiences. Additionally, employers that engage in community causes would appeal, especially to the Gen Z generation who value corporate social responsibility. Employers who also offer career development options are really, really popular with candidates as well. So I think overall, it is important for job seekers to connect emotionally with the employer brand, and employers need to show that they value employee well-being and not just productivity.
So before we move off of that topic, can you tell us a bit more, like in a practical sense, how you get all of that across to the job market? Like you have all that amazing stuff, and I'm sure the company does all that amazing stuff. How do you get that out into the market so that people can really connect with it and they actually know that you're even doing it? Because sometimes you can have an amazing culture, but if you don't advertise it, no one knows, you know, if your CEO hasn't written a famous best-selling book or whatever, people aren't really sure. So how do you get that out as a company to try to really start attracting more candidates?
So at this time, in my experience, I have had to work with a ton of cross-functional teams in terms of being able to curate our brand and get it out to the right platform. So working with our marketing, social media, our communications team, and our HR business partnering team. In the past, what we've done is to do a really deep dive on what our core corporate values are and our mission, and to try to distill that information in a way that appeals to job seekers, both on our career site and Glassdoor site and other social media platforms, including Instagram. We've also invited employees to give their own realistic, unfiltered experiences about what it is like to work with a particular employer. So those employee testimonials go a long way in resonating with candidates as well. On top of that, we are really big on being an irresponsive employer with regards to inviting our employees to give their honest reviews about what it is to work here. We also get reviews from candidates who have interviewed with us before, and we are committed to ensuring that we respond to each and every one of these reviews in a specific time frame. We are very open to feedback, whether it be positive or negative, and we take the extra step in ensuring that when we do get negative feedback, that just means that we need to go back to the drawing board and improve and iterate on our processes.
So Titi, with all of that, what I'm hearing is purpose-based hiring is really kind of the new trend and really helping employees to connect to the purpose, to the culture, and to the values of the organization. What about compensation? What's more important? What are you finding in the market? How have those trends really kind of shifted?
Wow, compensation is such an interesting topic. I think this year specifically, job seekers are increasingly aware that market rates have sort of dropped across most positions, whether it be tech or non-tech, significantly, and compared to like 2 years ago when the market was really, really hot. And so with compensation, I like to go in with an approach of transparency and having this information shared and aligned with the candidate very early on. Typically, on average, for instance, with tech roles, a senior software engineer developer position might have commanded like $200K a year and a half ago. Today, the same role is probably around $140 to $160K. Job candidates are sort of comfortable with this range, but they do expect that in spite of that comp drop, they're looking for other benefits that align with their lifestyle. So things like offering flexible ways of working, getting them like the best tools to enable them to do their work very really well, and also opportunities to connect with diverse teams are some of the things that candidates are looking for. And also, just to be really honest, people need jobs and they have bills to pay. And so motivation has changed from 2 years ago, where it was all about getting like the highest paid employer, to right now just being able to pay your bills and get on with life.
Yeah, you can't see us nodding because this is an audio podcast, but I'm thinking the whole time you're explaining this too, that doesn't mean they've gotten a break from inflation throughout that change too. So that's really challenging, I think, for candidates. It's just the market changes.
So these highly technical roles are still commanding great salaries. They're just not multiples of what they should have been.
That is true. Also, 2 years ago, like investors are now not so quick to give out money, and that has also impacted on comp and hiring.
TT, another huge discussion point, push and pull issue going on right now that everybody is completely confused about because we don't know who to believe, is the remote and hybrid role thing. Are we returning to the office? Is it better? Is it not? What are you finding in your role? How is that impacting your ability to negotiate with candidates, knowing that it's an employer's market? How has that changed in terms of the amount of flexibility you feel you need to give? Just give us the lowdown on how that's interacting with your role right now.
So I definitely see the pros and cons to each side. Fully remote positions offer a great way of working and having that work-life balance and all of those positives. On the other side, working in person also builds connections and team cohesion. And so while remote and hybrid roles have opened geographical flexibility, they've also introduced challenges in communication, team cohesion, and work-life balance. And from a recruitment standpoint, companies need to ensure that they are targeting self-motivated and disciplined candidates who thrive in independent settings. It is also crucial to provide clear guidelines on expectations and ensure access to tools for remote work success. Candidates, what I'm hearing is, yes, they 9 times out of 10, a job applicant would prefer like a fully remote position. But the truth is, a lot of employers are no longer offering that option. It's becoming far less available. And so while employers are narrowing down their access to wider talent pools, what I'm also seeing is that job seekers are flexible in terms of, hey, they're okay if the role isn't fully remote. The next best thing is it hybrid? Could I work some days in office and some days remote? And if that isn't an option, they are comfortable coming into the office.
So let's also talk a little bit about the future of hiring versus the way that we used to hire in the past. There's a lot of talk right now about skills-based hiring. There's also a lot of talk, TT, about the future and AI and the fact that technology is continuing to evolve. Tell us a little bit about how skills-based hiring versus the way that we used to hire in the past, which was more about degrees and what we used to do, behavioral-based interviews. What is the new trend and how are we going to stay ahead of the market changes and the technology changes in the future?
Definitely more employers are transitioning from traditional degree-based qualifications toward skills-based hiring to meet their dynamic needs. And this shift helps to widen talent pools. More specifically, it encourages diverse backgrounds and non-traditional candidates to apply. And as tech evolves, companies prioritize adaptability, problem solving, and creativity over formal qualifications. This shift allows employers to focus on what a candidate can do rather than what they have studied. And this results ultimately in a more inclusive and dynamic workforce. And so by focusing on skills rather than formal education, employers can acknowledge and, I guess, invite diverse pools of candidates to develop expertise. And this approach also helps job seekers from non-traditional backgrounds to feel empowered and included. And just to speak a little bit about technology and recruiting, more and more application tracking systems are incorporating AI and automation just towards enhancing efficiency and helping recruiters sift through large volumes of resumes. This really helps to streamline the screening process through chatbots and automated systems. And we'll say, though, that the key is in balancing automation with human touch. Over-reliance on AI can lead to overlooking candidates who may not meet every technical requirement but still possess very valuable soft skills. And so best practices for companies going forward, use AI for early stage screening, but ensure human interaction at critical stages.
So I want to ask another question then. What you said was non-traditional candidates versus degreed candidates. So does that mean that degrees are no longer important at all? How can you really assess skills if you're not talking about past performance?
Yeah, so are degrees still important? They're certainly a nice to have. I would not discount that. I have 2 degrees myself, but I will say that for a majority of roles, those degrees are not prioritized. They definitely provide some sort of leverage, especially if you're like early talent looking to land your first gig. But for more senior and highly skilled positions, degree requirements are not prioritized.
Another question would be about past performance. And so we used to believe in recruitment that past performance dictated future performance. And now with talking about skills-based hiring, we're really moving away from those types of questions, those behavioral-based interview questions. How then are you engaging in an interview and how do you assess skills?
So a big deal with employers these days is incorporating case studies into interview processes. And you will find this cuts across all roles, whether it be tech or non-tech. As part of the interview process, after assessing for soft skills, there is a technical-based requirement that is more case study focused. And this case study session is really to dig deep into each candidate's background in terms of their technical acumen, communication skills, how they tackle problems, how they engage with customers, whatever it may be. But the case studies are usually designed to assess for these hard skills. And that is usually used to predict whether or not a candidate will be successful in the role they're interviewing for.
All right, TT. So let's move on to sort of like the next stage or like another part of the recruitment procedure, which is the candidate experience. What have you done specifically around enhancing that over the course of your current role? And why do you think it's crucial to the overall recruitment strategy? Like, there's no point finding an amazing person and then dropping the ball at this stage, which I've personally seen happen a lot. You must be quite intentional about that to be successful. Just give us the rundown on what you're doing intentionally to provide an excellent candidate experience.
Candidates today expect transparency, timely communication, and a seamless process. Negative experiences can lead to bad reviews and harm the company's brand. If you go on LinkedIn, there's an overwhelming percentage of job seekers who say that they are ghosted or that they never hear from employers or they've gone through multiple interview rounds and suddenly no communication, which I think is just awful. And some of the ways I have used to enhance candidate experience is by providing clear communication. I personally keep candidates informed at every stage of the interview process. I am very quick to set expectations early on in terms of what they can expect throughout the interview process, how long the interview process is going to take in terms of time commitment, as well as when hiring decision is likely to be made. Also, I'm really, really fanatical about timeliness. So I like to reduce wait times in between the time when a candidate has completed an interview phase and we're waiting on like interviewers to submit feedback. I'm all over them. Like, I want interview feedback submitted within 24 hours so that I can get back to this candidate on time. And also beyond that, there's also personalization. I love to make the process human. I address candidates by their name. I reference their unique qualifications. And I want to build a rapport so that whether or not a candidate is successful at the end of an interview process, they still feel respected and they feel that they have invested their time well.
And so tell us a little bit about the new generation coming into the workforce. We know that Gen Z first joined the workforce in about 2019, right before the pandemic. That's when they graduated from university and college. What makes them special and the way that we have to adapt our recruitment strategies? Because they really are looking for different things than previous generations. Can you tell us a little bit about, first of all, how you see that they're behaving differently and what companies should be thinking about doing?
Absolutely. So I love Gen Z because they are a whole new breed and I just admire them so much for a number of reasons. Number one, they are not afraid to speak their mind. Doesn't matter if they are talking to their peer, to the CEO or a stakeholder, they will speak their mind. They are not the kind of people you say, hey, you're going to do this way because this is how we've been doing it for the past 20 years. They challenge the status quo. And they are also very invested in the impact of their work. That's really huge for them. And beyond all of that, they do not compromise on their work-life balance. They understand that work is work, but life, their life is their life and they want to enjoy life. And so for employers who are looking to attract and keep or retain Gen Z, recruiters must emphasize the importance of the work they're going to be doing in the organization. They need to show them how they will be making a difference and contribute to larger courses. And there's also the aspect of just ensuring that the work that they're doing would align with their work-life balance and would also offer opportunities for rapid growth. Gen Z also values diversity and inclusion in the workforce. And in fact, there are some of the candidates I have engaged with in the last couple of months have been quick to call out that they've gone to do research on our employer's executive leadership profile. And they're impressed to find that we have 40 to 45% women leaders as part of the exec team. And they value diversity and inclusion in the workplace, and they expect employers to take a clear stance on social issues as well.
So, Titi, I have a question about companies who may not have dedicated recruiters. So some of the folks who are listening are in very small companies where maybe the founder, maybe the CEO, maybe the COO, or one of the VPs might be doing a bunch of the recruitment because they haven't yet hit scale whereby they have dedicated recruiters. What's some advice that you can give to non-recruiters or non-traditional recruitment professionals about what you've learned recently that they can maybe apply in their practice?
My recommendation is a partner or hire a fractional recruiter, just because it is no longer business as usual when it comes to recruitment. It is so not. And it is one thing to put out a job ad and hire someone for a position, but it's another thing to make them grow and help build your company and brand to that next level where you want to be. So I would advise them taking a very intentional approach, either by partnering with a dedicated recruiter or a dedicated agency, towards incorporating or building their brand and helping bring their brand to life to attract the right kinds of talent that will help grow that organization.
I love that answer. We did not fully expect that, but I love you for saying it. I think it's so true. We see the lack of intention around that stuff come to fruition for clients all the time. And it seems like you're making some kind of savings up front, but you're actually losing a ton when you don't approach it in a professional way. There's so much to keep track of right now with the changing market. It's been a very confusing time, even for the professionals, to try to get a handle on how to best manage all this. It's completely flip-flopped in the last 2 years, exactly like you said earlier on. And so I think that is excellent advice. Would you agree, Kim?
Yeah. I mean, I think that we need to talk about the cost of getting it wrong. And not only for the hire that you make that might not be the right hire, but also, I mean, as Titi's talked about the candidate experience, every single person that you interact with as a potential candidate is somebody who maybe you may not hire today. You may want to hire them tomorrow or the next day. And if you don't have somebody who's dedicated and understands how to behave and how to treat candidates, then you're potentially losing future hires, as well as, by the way, could also be your customers.
I have an amazing true story about that. Recently, I was speaking to a prospective client who was having some challenges in that area. They did not do a good job of building loyalty to the organization through any of the recruitment orientation or, you know, the candidate experience, any of that. And when one leader of one team quit, he took the entire rest of the team with him. They were loyal to him. So they lost their entire department. Let's say it was accounting or marketing or whatever. In 1 week, they had no one left because the organization had not been proactive about any of the stuff that we've just talked about. And when the leader left, the next startup that he was going to, which was a competitor, was more than happy to take all their expertise and the team that he had built. And away they went. And that was it. They were just left holding the bag.
So the opportunity to really build connection with the company and really have employees feel connected to the culture, like Titi was talking about, I think would have really made a difference in that situation.
Oh, absolutely. They didn't even think twice about it. They were gone within 48 hours. Like, it's not like over a period of time. They also obviously didn't have any non-solicitation agreements in place, but that's a whole other episode. But yeah, it's a true story. It's almost incredible and very detrimental to that organization's growth.
So Titi, we've seen the market flip-flop, as Jennifer just said. And so it wasn't that long ago where it was really a candidate's market and employers were behaving a very specific way because they were all trying to woo candidates. But for far too many years before 2020, it really was an employer's market where there was a lot of employers who maybe weren't paying as much attention to the candidate experience. And so here we are again, back in a very comfortable place where there are more candidates than there are jobs. What's your advice here, recruitment professional, about lessons learned during the times when it was a candidate market? And how do we apply those learnings now that it is back to an employer's market?
My advice advice would be that recruitment teams need to keep their ears to the ground and stay informed in terms of market trends and economic shift. They need to listen to candidates. Like I generally, when I'm having one-on-one discussions with candidates, I like to ask them about their experiences in terms of what they are seeing in the job market, what their experience has been like, and so on. And additionally, I would advise recruiters to maintain flexibility in their approach. The reason is because the more flexible you are, the more you're able to just quickly adapt to economic trends. And so for me, best practices would include things like using analytics to predict trends and to make strategic decisions. So right now I'm hearing that the market is changing and that we might be going back to a job applicants market by mid-year of 2025. And if that's the case, I'm already having conversations with my comp team and with hiring managers just to encourage collaboration and to address recruitment challenges that might occur from multiple angles. I would also add that it's really important to be transparent with candidates about market challenges and about the company's direction. I feel that this builds trust and keeps communication channels open even in uncertain times.
All right. So TT, we ask all of our guests this question. What's the one thing you believe small businesses can do today to change the game for their people?
I believe it's by asking their people what they are really interested in and what they value. Too many times, small employers assume that our employees like this or they will prefer that, but they don't really ask their employees directly. So if you're still a small size organization, ask your people what actually matters to them and find ways of incorporating that into your culture while you're still small, because when you grow, it might not be as easy.
Amazing advice. Totally true.
So now we're going to move to the rapid fire question. So are you ready, TT?
I think so.
So before we get started, I need to define something.
Okay.
One of our rapid fire questions is quickest quit. Now I'm giving it away. And quickest quit is the company that maybe you joined and you quit the quickest after joining. So
okay.
You ran screaming from the building. Maybe we need to change the name of it.
All right. First job.
My first job was in advertising.
All right.
Nice. Fancy.
No, I was a copywriter.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. Yes.
Best job.
Ooh, that was at a learning management software company. I loved that job so much. And that was because our COO at the time was just the most down-to-earth exec leader I'd ever met.
Biggest mess up.
Oh my God. I emailed a job offer to the wrong candidate.
Oh, that hurts.
This was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But you never did it after that.
Never, ever, 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 ever. Oh my God.
Best learning.
The best learning experience I've had has been since moving to Canada. It was a whole shift in terms of rethinking, communicating in the right way, and forming connections.
And your quickest quit?
Was within under a year. I just could not believe how, I just felt so confined, so much so that I was not allowed to, I was not given any outer of autonomy. Hated it.
Yeah. There's very few people who like being micromanaged, I have to say. If you're listening, and do you think micromanaging is good? You need to get some help.
So TT, you have an interesting story. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your journey in recruitment and how it is that you began your North American career.
Yes. So prior to becoming a recruiter, I actually started my career as a copywriter. I did that for a year back in my home country, Nigeria, but it didn't pay too much. And so I pivoted and went into financial services, where I spent a couple of years and even grew to become a bank manager. But during this time, I noticed that I really had started to form deeper connections with our customers and the people that reported into me. And I wanted to build a career that sort of aligned with managing people or building connections with people. And so I decided to do a master's degree in HR. And then I started my career in HR recruitment. And prior to coming to Canada in 2015, I had worked a couple of years as a recruiter with an investment bank, which really helped helped me build my foundation in terms of working with cross-functional teams, communicating with people from different parts of the world, and also just understanding structure. Fast forward to moving to Canada. Of course, I went through everything that, you know, a typical immigrant would go through in terms that most employers did not want to give me a chance because they felt I wasn't communicating the right way or I didn't have that Canadian experience, blah, blah, blah. Eventually landed a role in a tech company as a recruitment assistant, by the way. So I literally had to restart my entire career from the bottom. And so as an HR assistant in 2015, yeah, I started working my way up again. Recruitment for me just lights a fire because I love the fact that I'm making a difference in the organization by finding and bringing in amazing talent. And so I feel that I can literally see my value. Every time I see a candidate that I helped to hire, I'm like, yeah, I did that. I was part of the team that brought in this amazing person. And so my first couple of years in Canada was okay. But for the most part, I was pigeonholed into a role whereby my role was mostly transactional. Just go find us this person, Titi. But nobody was really asking me about strategy regarding, hey, do you think we could find a wider talent pools if we went this way? Or how should we design our recruitment process? Not until I landed my recent role. And that was like a game changer for me. Never had I come across an employer who wanted to hire me first based on the fact that I was a woman of color. So that just blew my mind. I'm like, what? Amazing. And they really, not that they wanted me to be a number on their diversity stat, they wanted to hear my ideas and they did not hold me back. And because of that, I mean, I always tell employers, if you hire an immigrant, specifically if you hire a Nigerian and you show them that you trust them, they will work themselves to death. And that's a good or a bad thing. Take it how you want. They will work so hard just to prove that you made the right choice. And that's what I've done, aside from the fact that I'm a little bit of a workaholic, but it's really what I've done in terms of helping my employer find amazing international talent. I've been able to hire from multiple geographies. I would also associate that with the fact that I am an introvert. And so I'm more of a listener than a speaker. I listen to candidates. I try to quickly understand what matters to them. And once I'm able to tie that into what my employer can offer, it's usually a win-win from there on. And that's how I've been able to have like a really successful career in recruitment to date. I will also add that in the past few years, I've been promoted a couple of times and I now have like a semi-senior position, which is great. And so, yeah, this is me today.
So Titi, what is your advice to companies about the value of hiring international talent?
Where to begin? International talent just bring a different way of thinking. Like there's just so much wisdom and value and talent from listening or hiring from a geographical area where someone has done things a little differently and they've done it successfully. Also, you're bringing in just fresh ideas, new ways of thinking, new ways of doing things. You are most likely even hiring for cheaper, which is great or not, you know, depending. But more than that, you're building a truly world-class workforce where you don't have just one way of doing stuff. You are leveraging talent from diverse backgrounds to put you at the top of the map, which is awesome.
So just in terms of that, assuming that some small organizations may not have tried to tackle that on a proactive basis yet, or maybe they're a little bit nervous about going into markets they're not familiar with to look for talent. I know it's very complicated and it's a bit of a long-term play, but is there any quick advice you could give organizations who really want to step into that arena, but they're just not sure how to even get started?
From my experience, I will say that you have to be very intentional with your approach because I quickly learned that the way of communicating or engaging with candidates based in Brazil is very different from engaging with candidates based in Poland, for instance. So it might make sense to partner with an agency in those geo-regions or connect with highly specialized local recruitment agencies who have experience hiring internationally. They will be able to provide you with the guidance needed to penetrate that market and find the right talent.
Yeah, they need to find themselves a TT.
I mean, Jennifer, I could tell you there is only one Titi.
I believe it.
Thank you so much, Titi, for taking the time to come chat with us today and for providing everybody with such great advice.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. I've had a blast.
And that's a wrap on today's episode of Just JKing. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and took away some valuable insights to shake up your own HR game.
If you loved this episode, and we hope you did, make sure to hit that subscribe button, leave us a review, and share it with your network. We want to hear your thoughts, your feedback, and even your own wild HR stories.
And don't forget to connect with us on LinkedIn or drop us a message. Let us know what topics you want us to dive into next.
Until next time, keep it real, keep it human, and always keep JKing.
We'll see you next time on Just JKing. Thanks for listening.